Winning is definitely fun, but injuries are definitely not. On this episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, we'll break down the Yankees' recent four-game sweep over the Boston Red Sox and give you the latest injury updates on some of the Yankees' biggest stars. Let's get going here on the Pinstripe Talk podcast, which begins right now.
You are listening to the Pinstripe Talk podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, which is powered to you by Delahanty Media. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. It's been a nice week for the Yankees in terms of baseball play, having won six in a row. We mentioned on our last show, we broke it down for you, the two-game sweep over the Atlanta Braves. The Yankees are coming off a weekend series in which they swept the Boston Red Sox, their rival, and is it much of a rivalry at this point? The Yankees have won 10 straight contests against the Red Sox, their longest winning streak against their arch nemesis since the franchise record-tying 12th straight that was set in 1952 to 1953. And they've won 15 of the last 16 matchups, and it's just been a really nice thing to see. Yankees are 7-0 against the Red Sox this year. They'll have three more games against Boston, and you just hope that they're able to take that series as well because, as we know, in a 60-game season, every win against your division matters, regardless of how good or bad the teams are. And as you're going to see in this broadcast, the Red Sox are a mess. They have no pitching. It's just a situation where they're clearly going in a new direction. We knew that when they traded Mookie Betts this offseason. Chris Sale out for the year with Tommy John surgery. Eduardo Rodriguez out. He has a heart issue. We wish the best to him. Obviously, you never wish to see somebody go down with something like that. We hope that he's back on the mound soon. But again, the Red Sox have no depth in terms of pitching. The offense has been very minimum. We're going to talk a lot about some of the struggles they saw over the weekend against the Yankees. And it's just one of those things where the rivalry is not there right now. And you know what? It's kind of disappointing for the sport because this is the biggest rivalry, in my opinion. You know, growing up in it, regardless of how good or bad either team was, the series are always competitive. You know, you had those years where the Yankees weren't that good or the Red Sox weren't that good, but the games were always enticing. I felt during the weekend watching that, most of it was kind of like watching paint dry. And I'll go more into depth on each individual game to catch you up since the last time we spoke. But before that, let's give you a little bit of a publicity plug here. Go to DelahantyMedia.com for all your latest info regarding the Pinstripe Talk podcast. The Let's Debate podcast, you name it, everything is on that site for you, making it a lot easier for you to access our shows. Every link is on there, even past shows if you want to check that out. If you're a podcast lover and you have a certain place in which you listen to your podcast, find us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review the show on there. Also find us on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, you name it, the show is there available for you. We're on all podcasting platforms. Got some big news coming up over the next couple of weeks in regards to a possible new host for us, but we will give you that as soon as we have the green light to do so. So with that being said, let's jump into the Yankees-Red Sox four-game series that was held in the Bronx. And let's remember, the Yankees are playing really good at home, especially given that they haven't lost at home yet. Knock on wood, obviously. They have a big series against the Tampa Bay Rays coming up this week. And they won 10 straight games against the Red Sox, 11 straight home games, 15 of their last 16 against Boston, and then 15 of their last 16 in the Bronx against the Red Sox. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun playing the Red Sox. And there was a time a couple of years back where it wasn't as fun playing Boston because they were good. They had a couple of World Series runs. You know, it just felt like they were a little bit better than the Yankees. But right now, the Yankees are the king of this rivalry. And until the Red Sox start to shape up, it might stay like this for a while. So let's stop wasting time here. Get right into the series. Let's start off with Game 1, which happened on Friday night. The Yankees sent Gerrit Cole to the mound. And you just expected Cole to be ready for this, his first start as part of the rivalry. And he was ready. He was locked and loaded. He went 7 strong, allowed just one run, struck out 8 Red Sox in the process. And, again, he looked like the ace the Yankees signed. Obviously, you know, you've been seeing a lot of Cole. And against the Rays in his last start, he didn't struggle. And like I said in the last episode, you know, he had really good stuff. It was just that Tampa really worked some nice counts, and they really made him work for everything he got. But this was a great start against a depleted Red Sox roster or lineup, whatever you want to call it. But Cole looked good. The Yankees go on to win 10-3. Holder struggled in the eighth. They go to Ottavino. Heller closes it out in the ninth. Some notable Bronx Bombers in this one. LeMahieu, two hits. Can you imagine that he had two hits and his average actually went down? He was 2-for-5, his average at .429 in the year. We're going to talk a little more about LeMahieu as we cover Saturday's game. Luke Voit scored two runs. And then Gleyber Torres had four hits, and you're finally waiting for that Gleyber breakout. He's been good as of late. He has reached base safely in 9 straight contests. The defensive woes are there, but offensively, it looks like the 23-year-old is starting to get back on track. Mike Tauchman, how much more can you say about this guy? He had 3 hits, 4 RBIs in this ball game. Gary Sanchez added a home run. You just hope that he could figure it out offensively as well. Started to see a little more power coming out of Gary, which is good. And then you had Frazier, had a hit and 2 RBIs. And, you know, it was just a nice overall outing for the Yankees. And they really beat up on the Red Sox pitching that has been their struggle for the full 2020 season so far. So Yankees take game one. They head into game two. They turn the ball over to James Paxton. And Paxton had one bad inning. Listen, he went 5 innings. And he had a really bad third inning, which he allowed 3 runs. That was all they would get off of Paxton. Ended up throwing 83 pitches. I'm glad Boone took him out after 5. Let him go out on a good note. The guy threw well. The last 2 starts are encouraging. Paxton's velocity is starting to get there. You saw him hit close to 95. I think he had 94.8 to be exact. And it was just really exciting to see Paxton get back on track. And hopefully he continues because he's a very valuable piece in the starting rotation. And for the only time this series, the Yankees saw an actual starting pitcher in Nathan Eovaldi. He went into the 6th. He allowed 8 runs. And he kind of got left to dry a little bit. I thought that they should have took him out a little earlier than they did. But regardless, it is what it is. Yankees get 3 home runs in the ballgame. Sanchez homers once again. Urshela hit a home run right away off of Eovaldi in the first inning. And Clint Frazier. Downtown goes Frazier. He had 3 hits in this ballgame and had 5 RBIs. He's on a tear. He is trying to prove that he's an everyday player in this league. Now, the sad news in this ballgame, DJ LeMahieu goes down due to injury. He was seen swinging a bat. First pitch swinging. It was a really ugly pitch. Took a bad swing at it. And he came up and he was grimacing. And who knew what was going on with LeMahieu, the Yankees all-star and MVP caliber player. But it ends up being that he has a sprained thumb. He'll be out for approximately 2 to 3 weeks, according to Aaron Boone. I don't know how much you can really believe Boone at this point because of what happened with Aaron Judge. But it is what it is. We're going to have to go with his word. And if you go back in the history books, LeMahieu had this injury back in 2018 with the Rockies. He missed at least 2.5 weeks. So it's not ideal for the Yankees, but they're going to continue with that next man up mentality. And if you're a Yankees fan, if you're like me, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, what the heck did they do to deserve all these injuries? You lost 3 MVP caliber players within 1.5 weeks. You lost Stanton, then you lose Judge, now you lose LeMahieu. And if you would have told me before the season what one player could the Yankees not afford to lose, I would say DJ LeMahieu. Because let's face it, he has been tremendously valuable since they signed him to that steal of a 2-year deal. And for the time being, they're going to have to go with that next man up mentality. Like I mentioned, they have the pieces to do it, but it's just frustrating to see that they have to do it. And only a matter of time before we can see if the Yankees can really sustain the division lead that they have with the, I don't want to call them backup players because a lot of them are major league caliber players, but the role players on this team. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Yankees win the second game of the series 11-5. After Paxton, Boone goes to Loaisiga, and he's been a very valuable piece in that bullpen. It seems like the confidence in him is just continuing on a daily basis. And then they go to Luis Avalon. He throws a nice inning in the 7th, and then Sessa closes it out for the final 2. He let up 2 runs, but it is what it is. Yankees win the ballgame. It was well out of reach. 11-5 was your final. A lot of the damage early on. Yankees scored all their runs in the first 7 innings of this ballgame. So you're up 2-0 in the series. You're heading into Sunday Night Baseball. And before we get into the actual game, I have to admit, It was one of the worst experiences of my life. And why I'm saying that is the Sunday Night Baseball broadcasts. They have two broadcasts going on at once. You have your regular broadcast with Matt Vasgersian and A-Rod, and if you could tolerate listening to A-Rod compare Mike Ford to Babe Ruth, you know, that's good for you. But then you have they call it the Nerdcast, and that's probably not ESPN's word, but that's what a lot of people on Twitter are calling it. And they give you a bunch of numbers and stats and analytics and stuff trying to introduce you to it. But for somebody who follows the game, I understand what they're talking about. And they try to break it down for everybody, but I just feel like they could combine the broadcast and include it in the regular broadcast, because I think that it would give them more to talk about instead of just focusing on one or the other. Because on one broadcast, you have A-Rod and Vasgersian kind of just talking and not really paying attention to the game. And then in the other one, you have this all the information. So I think they could just combine it. I hate any game that is not on the YES Network. And while I was sitting there watching the broadcast, I kept saying to myself, man, I miss Michael Kay and David Cone making fun of Paul O'Neill in his basement and hearing their stories and hearing David Cone break down certain things for pitchers and O'Neill giving his great insight in regards to hitting. And then, of course, Michael Kay, who I consider one of the best in the business, and I just love listening to him. So I do miss them. But luckily, we don't have to deal with ESPN anymore this year. So let's just jump into Sunday Night Baseball. Jay Happ was going on the mound, and Happ, he is an issue, man. He is a stinking issue. The Yankees skipped his start. We talked about it last broadcast, and he was mad about it. He was ready to file a grievance that the Yankees are trying to hold up his vesting option. Meanwhile, the guy stinks and can't really pitch well, but, you know, them holding him out or skipping his start is their fault. I don't understand that, but it is what it is. So Happ gets a start against the Red Sox. He's been really good against them. He actually pitches well. He goes 5 2/3, only allows one run, strikes out three, walks two. He looks solid. But again, how much stock can you take in this Jay Happ start? You know, we know the details about how good he's been against the Red Sox. We know that the history is there. But is this a sign that Happ is getting back on track, or is this just a tease to say, you know, the guy just pitches well against the Red Sox. You're not getting anything out of him otherwise. And we'll see. You know, we'll see in his next start, he'll pitch against the Mets or whatnot, but we'll see. And we'll see what he's able to bring to the table. And, you know, I think he's got to prove it. You know, he's complaining about the vesting option, and if the Yankees are smart, they're holding out on that vesting option. No way, and no way am I letting that thing vest. I am not paying that guy next year. The way he's been pitching, no way. Almost a 70 ERA, and I know it's a shortened season and whatnot, but he's not worthy of the money they would pay him. Prove it. Pitch better. It's simple. But he did well against the Red Sox. So, you know what it is, what it is. And the Yankees win that bowl game 4-2. Ottavino, Green, and Britton do what they do at the back end of the bullpen. And Britton, at the time, was leading the league in saves with 8. After the game, there was rumors that Chapman was coming back before Monday's game, and Britton was asked, you know, you're going to be moved out of the closer spot. What do you think about that? And Britton said, and I love this quote, and I think it's fantastic. He said, yeah, I like closing, but I like winning even more. You know, those are the kind of guys you need on a winning team. Britton could close on probably any other team in the big leagues, maybe 4 or 5 teams that he wouldn't close on. But he's that good enough and that team-oriented enough that his role doesn't matter. He's going out there to pitch regardless of when Aaron Boone needs him, and that's the kind of guy you like to see. And how lethal, and that's without Tommy Canley, is that back end of the bullpen. You mean to tell me your starter could give me 5 innings and you could go to Green for the 6th, Ottavino for the 7th, Britton for the 8th, and Chapman for the 9th? Are you kidding me? That's insane. And there's a lot of good arms in that pen. So the depth just keeps going stronger, and that's definitely one of the Yankees' strong points. In this ball game, Mike Ford hits a home run off of Mazza. Mazza is apparently related to the DiMaggio's, but that was the big thing they kept talking about on the broadcast. I kind of got sick of listening to it. And the Yankees had some notables. They had 3 guys with 2 hits. Tauchman had 2 hits. He hit in the 3-hole in this ball game. Gleyber had 2 hits, and then Ford had 2 hits of his own. Yankees did all their damage in the first 3 innings of the ballgame. They were up for good. and that's your bowl game. Yankees are up 3-0 in this series. They improve to 6-0 on the year against the Red Sox. Going into the final game of this four-game series against the pitiful Boston Red Sox. Now, let's go into Monday's game. And around 3:30, I got to give you the timeline because I think it's important. Around 3:30 or 4 o'clock, the Yankees released their lineup. And I thought that it was a joke. I really did. I didn't think it was a legitimate lineup. They only had, I believe, 3 starters in the mix. But I'm going to read you the lineup. Okay? Aaron Hicks in the Lido spot in center field. Voit at first. Frazier in right. Torres in short. Sanchez the DH. Miguel Andujar in left. Then you had Estrada at third. Kratz behind the plate. And Tyler Wade at second base. So, I hate to sound like this, and I don't want to be rude, but I'm going to be. This lineup had the feel of, okay, we're getting ready for the Tampa Bay series. If we lose this ball game, it's quite okay. That's what it felt like. It didn't feel like they cared. They were like, you know what? We're going to throw this lineup out here. Boone, for the most part, took the names out of the hat and was like, okay, I'm going to put these guys in the lineup, and that's how we're going to roll. And, you know, no Urshela. Obviously, no LeMahieu, no Judge, no Stanton, because those guys are hurt. No Tauchman until late in the ball game. So you saw a lot of the backups get regular playing time, and the Yankees ended up winning this ball game. And I'm sitting here and I'm laughing hysterically because I just find it hilarious that that's how bad the Red Sox are this year. The Yankees ended up winning this ball game, but this game was full of ups and downs in regards to everything that was going on. Montgomery looked good through 3 2/3. He looked sharp. He only allowed 1 run. But then we get an hour and 23-minute rain delay. Oh, my goodness. Hour and 23-minute rain delay. It was pouring in the Bronx. It was pouring in New Jersey. So it's not a surprise that we had that big of a drop-off. But at the time of the rain delay, the Yankees were up. So, unfortunately, it wasn't an official game where they could call it. The Yankees got off to an early lead. Luke Voit hit 2 home runs in this ballgame. He's starting to heat up. 7 home runs on the year. Aaron Hicks hit a home run. He had a rocket off the second deck in right field. And Estrada in his start, you know, he's another guy that on a lot of teams, he would probably be a role player or get a lot of at-bats. And for the Yankees, they just have a lot of depth. So he took advantage of the opportunity to get the start, and he made the most of it. The Yankees really didn't get much out of the middle part of their lineup. Frazier was 0-for. Torres had 2 walks, but he was 0-for. Sanchez, he also had 2 walks, but he was 0-for. So you like the patience from Torres and Sanchez. We mentioned how they've been struggling a little bit, and you go from there. One bad side, Miguel Andujar really stinks in left field. I really don't want to see him out there anymore. I get they're trying to get him at bats, but if it's not a DH and even at third base, like, that scares me a little bit. If it's not a DH, I really don't want to see Andujar out there. It's just a deficit. He missed a really weird-looking fly ball that I think took a turn on him. But, again, it's a play that he cannot afford to make, especially in a game like that. It could have really changed the outcome of the game. Luckily, Boston stinks, and they really have no life at this point. So the Yankees are 16-6. They're in first place in the division. It's great times in New York, except for the fact that everybody's injured. Let's go over some of the injury updates. LeMahieu, like I said, 2 to 3 weeks. We shouldn't expect to see him back probably until September at this rate. And then Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge was placed on the injured list after our last show, and he seems to be close to coming back. It seems like it was more of a precaution for the Yankees to take care of their star player. Obviously, you don't want to see him go down, and if you let it linger, it could last longer. I'm not holding my breath. When they activate Judge, I'll be happy. But until then, you got to roll with what you got. Frazier, Tauchman, those guys are doing the job. So for the time being, they could definitely get away with it. Hopefully, you see Judge in the near future. And Giancarlo Stanton, when talking to reporters, he showed his frustration. Listen, I know we all give Stanton a lot of slack for not being able to stay healthy, and I'm one of them. Listen, that dude needs to stay healthy. But you feel for the guy. It's not that the guy doesn't want to play. The guy wants to be out there. And you could sense the frustration when he was talking to the media. And you just hope that he could come back in the near future. Now, are the injury concerns for him and Judge concerning? Absolutely. Are you concerned about LeMahieu? Oh, man, absolutely. Because if that thing doesn't heal right or it takes longer, it could be a bad situation for the Yankees. However, you know, the Yankees have built this tremendous depth. We talk about it all the time. So for the time being, you're going to see a lot of Tuchman, a lot of Frazier, a lot of Hicks. Obviously, Hicks is a starter, but you're going to see a lot of them. A lot of Gardy. You're going to see a lot of Tyler Wade. You're going to see possibly a lot of Estrada. But they just have to make it work, and I'm sure they're going to make it work. It's just a matter of the pitching continuing to give quality outings. So, number one, you don't kill the bullpen. And number two, you start to get kind of in a groove in regards to ultimately locking up not only the top seed in the division, but you want to be the top record in baseball. You want to have that home field advantage. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the playoffs while we wrap up the show today. One thing that I do want to discuss, and I know that I might be in the minority here, but I just don't know if Gleyber Torres is a full-time shortstop at the big league level. And trust me, I understand. He's 23 years old. He's transitioning back full-time. It's not an easy thing for a young player. But you just look at him defensively, and it seems like it's such a liability. And there's Yankee fans out there, and I have to point this out because I think it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. There's Yankee fans out there that are saying, go get Lindor and move LeMahieu to first and put Torres back at second. It's not that easy. First of all, you're essentially saying to me that you would rather have Francisco Lindor than DJ LeMahieu because, let's face it, if you trade for Lindor, they're going to let LeMahieu walk because they're going to have to pay Francisco Lindor. And then you also have the situation where you're going to have to pay Aaron Judge. You're going to have to pay Gleyber Torres. You're going to have to pay these guys. You're not going to get them for cheap for long. So you're going to have to make that decision. I don't think it's one the Yankees would make. And then the other thing you have to remember is if you move LeMahieu to first base, you're taking at bats away from Luke Voit and Mike Ford. And why would you take at bats away from Voit? The way that Voit's been ever since he became a Yankee, Voit had a little bit of struggles early on in the year, but, you know, the guy's been nothing but great since they got him in that trade. And they really gave up nothing for him. So I don't understand that logic. I don't want to hear that anymore. They're not going to trade for Francisco Lindor. If they're going to do anything at the deadline, it's going to be a pitcher because or a starting pitcher because they're going to need that extra depth. They're not going to go out and trade for a perennial all-star shortstop just because they're unsure about Gleyber. Maybe they get a backup shortstop that they feel more confident in that can play a couple of days a week at short and give Gleyber a break. But I don't even see that. I think they're content with Tyler Wade and Estrada, to be quite honest with you. I think the only thing they're really missing right now is some depth within the starting pitching. So please, stop with the whole LeMahieu back to first, Gleyber to second type of narrative. It's not going to happen right now. And there's a lot on the line. Do you want to lose DJ LeMahieu? I don't. I want to keep LeMahieu long term. He's an elite second baseman. Keep him at second base. And Voit's been nothing but good. So let's stop that narrative now. Let's just cut that out. Now, I mentioned before Gleyber riding that 9-game on base streak. And good for Gleyber starting to get back on track for the Bronx Bombers. They need him. Let's face facts. They need this guy to be good. They don't need him to be pressured and hitting in the 3-hole. They need him to be that guy that came up and just said, you know what? I'm going to go out. I'm going to play. I'm going to do me. And I think the defensive woes will ultimately stop or get better. I think that with work, I'm sure the Yankees are going to really settle him down and kind of get him back on track. Yeah, I voiced my concern about Gleyber, but I know how talented he is, so I'm expecting him to figure it out, but for the time being, it is a concern. Now, let's look ahead as the Yankees open up a big series against Tampa Bay. That series starts up on Tuesday night in the Bronx. Tanaka and Snell, that's a great pitching matchup. I can't wait to watch that one. Then you have Tyler Glasnow and Gerrit Cole in the second game of the 3-game set. And the final game, it's undecided for Tampa who's going to pitch, but James Paxton will get the ball for the Yankees. That's a 1 o'clock start on Thursday, and that's a good point for us to bring up. Our next show will come to you on Thursday afternoon. We will break down the entire series for you, and we'll lead you right up to our next live episode of the Let's Debate podcast. So there's a lot of exciting things in regards to Yankees baseball. Hopefully, we're talking about some good things out of this series. Yankees do have some good pitching set up for this one, and it should be fun, especially after the Yankees lost 3 of 4 in Tampa. There's a little bit of bad blood between the two teams. Expect the Bronx Bombers to come out with a vengeance before they head to Citi Field for another series against the New York Mets, another rivalry type of series. And I know I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I got to mention, Happen Porcello on Friday night in that ball game. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm glad I don't have to broadcast that game. Now, before we wrap up today's show, I want to talk about a couple of things that happened throughout the big leagues that aren't related to Yankees baseball, but I want to make note of them. Number one, as you guys know, I've mentioned a bunch of times, I'm a St. Joe's alum. It's good to see the St. Joe's alum in the big leagues doing their thing. Number one, Rob Kaminsky made his major league debut for the Cardinals. He's pitching two straight games, or because it's doubleheaders, two straight days, two scoreless innings, struck out Jimenez, a very good hitter from the White Sox. So congrats to Rob. Really nice to see him really thriving at the big league level, worked really hard to get there. The second St. Joe's alumni that I want to talk about, Tommy La Stella with the Angels. I picked a really good night to stay up till almost 1:30 in the morning to watch the Angels and watch La Stella. La Stella hit a walk-off home run to give the Angels a win. He's awesome. He's a guy that I watch all the time. And as a St. Joe's guy, you got to definitely root for him. So on that note, congrats, Tommy. Congrats, Rob. You guys are doing great. And I'll definitely keep an eye on what you guys are doing as the year goes on and more. And hopefully for Rob, this is the beginning of a long big league career for him. And my final thought of the day, as you guys probably are aware of, Fernando Tatis is the big story in baseball. Not because he leads the bigs in home runs or the fact that he's the most exciting player to watch in a game, but the Rangers had an issue with him swinging at a 3-0 pitch. They were up 7. It was the 8th inning. Tatis gets a meatball. A meatball on 3-0. Hits a grand slam. You can't discredit the dude, right? But his own teammate, Eric Hosmer, talks to him in the dugout. The Rangers were not happy with it. There's a whole bunch of drama with it. Here's my take. I get the whole 3-0. There's an unwritten code that old guys follow that, you know, you take the pitch and whatnot. Chris Woodward, you were a bench player. You weren't even good, so please just stop with your logic here that, you know, this unwritten code garbage. I'm tired of hearing you two. If you don't like it, play better. If you don't like it, pitch better. You know, the guys, nobody's paying or nobody's sitting there watching a game saying, oh, my God, I want to watch Fernando Tatis walk. No, bro. You throw him a fastball. The guy crushed it. Yeah, that's on you. And who's to say that in that next inning you don't come up and score 8 runs and take the lead? So if he walks, that's 1 run compared to 4. Pitch better. Play better. You're in the big leagues. You're getting paid. You're getting paid to play. If you can't physically do it, if you can't get outs, then you don't belong. And if you want to give a meatball on 3-0, that's on you. And a lot of pitchers are kind of backing Tatis on this, and I'm glad they are. Trevor Bauer is one of them. There's a lot of guys. Eduardo Rodriguez is another one. If you're looking at the stats and you have a lot of information, you're getting a lot of situations where you can look at the data and you can see, okay, this guy likes to swing at 3-0. This guy doesn't. You can curve one in for a guy that doesn't swing at 3-0, but a free swinger like Tatis, that's a really dumb thing to do. So, come on. Let's not look way too much into anything, and let's just stop this garbage of, you know, this is the unwritten code. No, there's no unwritten code here. 3-0 is 3-0. If you want to give him a fastball, if you're willing to risk him hitting that ball out of the ballpark, that's on you. I don't care what the score is. The guy's up there to hit. He's a young player. He shouldn't be apologizing for hitting a home run. That's ridiculous. We want to see him hit. We don't want to see him walk. So, or have to take pitches. He got a pitch he liked. He hit it, and he crushed it. That's on your pitcher. If you want to reprimand anybody, tell your pitcher, don't put a fastball right down the middle of the plate to one of the best hitters in the game in that situation. Come on, be better. That's why people don't like baseball, because there's so much unnecessary garbage that goes along with it. The kids are not watching a game to see Tatis not swing the bat. Because you're up by 7 or 8 runs means you got to stop swinging the bat? Come on. That just seems pathetic to me. Get your pitching better, Chris Woodward. Your team's not that good. Let's get on track here, buddy. Let's worry about the big things here, not the fact that Tatis hit a home run and, you know, you were embarrassed by it. It is what it is. So I'm going to get off that rant. We're going to get back into Yankees baseball here for just to wrap up the show. Big series for Tampa Bay. A big series for the Yankees. It's a huge series, and I get that fact that, oh, you know, the Yankees could backpedal into the postseason. But we're at that predicament where we want to win the division. And if they put a postseason bubble and it is a neutral site, you want to be that team that bats last. As always, follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Talk ND, my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Find us on Facebook by searching up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. Go to our website, www.delahantymedia.com. Go to our shop, buy some gear. A lot of people have been putting in some orders. The gear looks great. Get yours today. Don't waste any time. Find our show, Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on there. Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Music, you name it, our show is there available for you. We'll be back Thursday afternoon with a brand new episode recapping the Tampa Bay series. It'll be fresh right out of the end of that series and that final ball game of the three-game set heading in to the weekend series against the rival Mets. Until then, we'll catch you next time. My name is Nick Delahanty. This has been another episode of the Pinstripe Talk Podcast. We'll be back Thursday afternoon. Make sure you check it out. Until then, let's go Yankees. Stay safe, everybody, and take care.